Welcome, everyone, to the Women in Podcasting Show. My name is Jennifer Hensel, and I'll be your host today. I'm so excited because I'll be interviewing Naomi Grossman. Naomi Grossman was a 2018 Primetime Emmy nominee for Outstanding Actress in a Short-Form Comedy or Drama for her role in Control-Alt-Delete. But she's best known as the first crossover character and fan favorite, Pepper, on FX's American Horror Story Asylum and Freak Show seasons. Naomi also appeared as a new character, the Satanist Samantha Crow, in the 8th season Apocalypse. Huffington Post, The Wrap, Screen Rant, and Sci-Fi all ranked Pepper among the best AHS characters ever. I totally agree. Fans may also recognize her from cameos in the following feature films: Table for Three, The Chair, One Bedroom, Sky Sharks, Bite Me, Painkillers, The Lurker, Murder RX, The Portal, Preacher 6, An Accidental Zombie Named Ted, and Fear Inc. Naomi graduated in theater from Northwestern University and is a former member of the Groundlings Sunday Company. She's had a successful YouTube channel for many years. It's really funny. I highly recommend checking it out. I'll put the link for that in the show notes. So here's my interview with Naomi Grossman.
Welcome to the Women in Podcasting Show. Enjoy inspiring stories, interesting interviews, and powerful strategies from women around the world. Jennifer Hensel spotlights today's top podcasters, new podcasters, and expert guests. Get tips for leveling up your life, gaining visibility, growing your business, monetizing your podcast, and so much more. We invite you to support women in finding their voice and sharing their passion. It's all about women empowering women.
Naomi, what an honor it is to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You have played one of the most memorable and favorite characters ever on FX's American Horror Story as Pepper from Asylum and Freak Show seasons. Mm-hmm. And you are so multi-talented. Your acting is amazing. And you've acted alongside Sarah Paulson, Jessica Lange, James Cromwell, Zachary Quinto, Joseph Fiennes, Lily Rabi. I mean, the list goes on and on. It is really impressive. But let's start from the beginning, because you've done a lot of other things as well, because we'd love to hear about your acting journey and how you started in the Groundlings and got inspired to do your own very successful YouTube channel, which you've been doing for quite a while now, quite many years, right? How many years? 10, 12?
Yeah, it was when I was let go from the Groundlings, which is a whole other story, which I'll tell you. That was in, 2006.
Oh, wow.
And I think I had a channel at that point, but it was like, you know, I realized just because these sketches aren't going to be seen on, you know, Melrose Avenue doesn't mean they can't be seen by the rest of the world. So, that was really the genesis of, you know, that channel. Like I realized that wasn't the beginning. That wasn't the end. That was just the beginning. And there was a lot more people out there in the world that I could, reach other than just the, you know, 99 people that they stuff into that theater every Sunday.
Oh, that's amazing. And then we'll hear about your journey that led you to get on American Horror Story and how being Pepper has helped your career. So we would love to hear your story.
Well, I was born on the coldest day of the year. It's true. In Denver, Colorado. My parents were really very creative kind of artists themselves. And so my dad was an architect. My mom was a pianist. And we were just very involved going to, you know, cultural events. And, you know, we were going to the opera and the symphony and the theater and the ballet and the, you name it. And I just always knew I wanted to be up there. You know, I didn't want to be in the audience. I wanted to be on stage. And they figured that out pretty. I wasn't hiding it. So they were very supportive of that, being artists themselves. And so I kind of got involved with anything and everything that was in Denver, Colorado at the time, which wasn't a lot, but, you know, Father Dowling Mysteries and regional commercials and, you know, a lot of children's theater. I just got busy. And yeah, I guess it was, so yeah, I was just kind of always this drama nerd forever and ever. And then when I went to college, it was like, actually, it's funny. There's a producer that I'm working with now who I met back in college. And she tells the story that when she first met me, it was like New Student Week at Northwestern University. And I introduced myself as I'm Naomi Grossman and I'm an actress. And it was like, who does that? You know what I mean? Who's like 18 years old and is like already so sort of self-realized and totally confident with herself. But it's true. I was an actress. Like I'd gotten my SAG card years before. And besides, I kind of sometimes joke that it's akin with being gay. Like you just know, you know, like when you're a performer, you just know. And there's no, you can't pray the actor away. I wish, or I would have. But yeah, so I was a theater major. I of course took, you know, Rocks for Jocks and all the other classes because I absolutely had to, but it wasn't without kicking or screaming. I secretly wish I had been in a conservatory and could just do, singing and dancing class. But I am very glad I didn't at the end of the day, because Northwestern was such a just wealth of really talented people. Like I said, some of which I'm working with now even. So from there, I had a boyfriend who graduated before me and who moved to LA, and he was a PA on Friends, which at the time was like, oh my God, you're getting Jessica Aniston coffee. You might, or Jessica, what am I saying? Jennifer Aniston coffee. Like you basically made it. You know what I mean? If you're giving her coffee. So obviously I followed him here to Hollywood. And obviously the, you know, relationship fell apart the second I got here, but I'm glad because he got me out of I haven't experienced a winter since and I don't miss it. I needed to be here because I've always, you know, while I did go to theater school and I was sort of considered the, you know, the sellout who, you know, admitted to wanting, you know, fame and fortune and not necessarily the life of a struggling artist in a shoebox in New York. And so the fact that I just sort of beelined it for Tinseltown, that was sort of frowned upon and among the theater majors at Northwestern, but meh, they've all come here by now anyway, so whatever. But I beat them here by a couple years and really struggled, honestly, when I first got here. And when I say first got here, I do mean for like the first 20 years. Maybe that's not fair, but I the first couple years I was just banging my head against the wall because I was, you know, I had my headshots and resumes and I would go to the corner and read Backstage West and send them off to, you know, to get some auditions. And, you know, it was like, what am I doing with my life? I'm not acting. I spent $50,000 a year to be an actor. And yet I'm really just mailing pictures. Like, what is that? And so I realized, well, geez, it's kind of like chicken or the egg. You know, if you can't, you're not going to get cast without something on your resume, but how do you get something on your resume if you're not cast? So I really kind of took it upon myself to cast myself. And so that's when I started writing. I wrote my first one woman show, which was called Girl in Argentine Landscape. It's an autobiographical story of my own journey in Argentina, where I spent some time as an exchange student. That was sandwiched between Denver and Chicago. Yeah. And while that show didn't directly open doors in Hollywood, it definitely reignited my passion. And I realized, like, yes, this is what I'm good at. This is what I love. This is what I need to be doing. And so, yeah, from that moment on, I just sort of learned my lesson. And it's like, okay, we can't not be creative. Like, that is just not an option. Like, you gotta stay, you know, that's where I find my happiness. So between that show and my second one-woman show, Carnival Knowledge, that's where I found myself on Melrose Avenue at the Groundlings. And again, it was just one of those things where I had pretty much, you know, decided for myself that, you know, this is a very hard business, and you got to get a gimmick, to quote Ms. Mazeppa from Gypsy. You know, you've got to kind of find your niche. And I decided, like, okay, I'm a comedian. You know, maybe not a stand-up, but I do, I have kind of a comic energy and feel. And so I'm just going to just do, like, sketch and improv and, like, you know, character-based comedy. That's what I decided was my thing. And I think in many ways that was good. You know, you do need to kind of know yourself. But at the same time, at the end of the day, it was a little bit myopic on my part, because let's face it, take American Horror Story, for example, which is, I mean, Pepper is, there's no bigger character. Like, that is character based, but it's not 3-minute sketches on SNL. It's an hour long show on FX, you know? So I think I was, doing myself a favor and a disservice at once, because, you know, it was good that I sort of found my thing, but there's a whole world, there's a million other genres out there that I was sort of neglecting until they presented themselves to me. So, yeah, I spent some time at the Groundlings, as I mentioned. I was probably there about 6 years, and, you know, don't get me wrong, there needs to be a reality show, like a, you know, that a Big Brother or one of those that'll, like, tell all the Groundling secrets. It'll never happen. They'll never let that happen. But man, the stories those walls could tell, like, it's a whole, you know, because you're on an island and you need others to fail in order for you to succeed. And yet you need people to succeed in, because you're only as strong as your weakest link. Does that make sense? So you're really, like, you're counting on each other to kill it and, you know, flop at the same time. It's awesome and toxic and exciting and scary. And I don't know. I think of it as, like, the best of times, worst of times, because, again, kind of like Northwestern, I was surrounded by these just really brilliant, really quick, witty, smart people. And yet there was also, I honestly, when I got cut, you know, I didn't take it real well. And it was pretty much like, you know, I had an authority telling me, and not just any authority, it was the Groundlings telling me that I was not good at this, that I was, you know, was not to come back. And it sounds harsh, but that's how this is. Like, the Groundlings, it's kind of like everyone who's ever been funny in their high school ever winds up there, right? And they're at, like, the bottom of the pyramid, and slowly it works its way up. And I managed to get to the very top. Like, I was in the Sunday Company, which is one below becoming a Groundling. And when you become a Groundling, it's like, it's like your Scientology Sea Org, like, you've arrived. You are, you know, you're one step away from, you know, SNL. And so, you know, I really built this thing up like the end all be all. And so when I did finally get the axe, and everyone got the axe, by the way, there were literally, of my cast, there were 14 of us in the cast. only four of which made that particular cut. And of those four, only one actually became a groundling. And she got on SNL. That was Michaela Watkins. But anyway, The point is, it's extremely competitive. And like, you know, I shouldn't feel bad that I got the axe. Like, ultimately, there are way more people who've been successful in this business who've gotten the axe than actually became a groundling. Like, I've been on Adam Carolla's podcast, and he was like, oh, I didn't even make it past basic. And it's true. Like, hilarious people got cut way too early from there. Like, I don't know how the hell I made it the way as long as I did. But when I did get cut, I ended up taking an entire year off of acting because I realized, like, okay, well, I suck at this apparently, you know, they said so. So it must be true. And I did. I took a whole year off. And that's when, once again, I learned my lesson. I realized, no, I am creative. I need to be creating in order to be happy. And that's when I got started on my second solo show, Carnival Knowledge. You said you wanted to hear the full journey. So I'm giving it to you. Okay.
We want to hear it. We want to hear everything.
You're hearing it. So yeah, and once again, the Carnival Knowledge was a similar story as that of Girl in Argentine Landscape. It, you know, these things, it's like my own baby. It takes like a good 9 months to birth. And then it's, you know, it was really gratifying in every way. I had sold out runs and rave reviews. And, you know, I took it from LA to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland to London's West End to New York, off Broadway. Like it, you know, it was great. And yet still, you know, it wasn't necessarily translating into mainstream Hollywood success at all. I, all the while I was still, you know, busy with my YouTube channel, which, you know, like I said, that was born out of my own, you know, I had all these wigs and, you know, a whole closet full of scripts, little 2-3 minute sketches that were just collecting dust that I realized, you know, I should do something with them. So I did. And I think it's good. It ultimately, that's what kind of kept me in the game. It's what gave, you know, because I wasn't being cast in a traditional way, it's what gave, you know, the powers that be at American Horror Story something to Google. Let's face it. Like, had it not been for that, I literally would have nothing on my resume, you know? So, yeah, I mean, this whole while, you have to understand, I had representation, obviously, and I was going out for, you know, I did commercials and this and that, but I wasn't, yeah, I just wasn't being cast. And in many ways, I do get it because developmental actors, that is actors, you know, first starting out, they tend to get those or be considered anyway for the, you know, co-starring roles. That is the nurse number two to the left, the waitress who's, you know, want fries with that, and then they're out. And those roles are really to be kind of thrown away because it's not about them. You know what I mean? It's about whoever's, you know, sitting in the booth ordering the French fries. And yet I'm kind of a lot, if you didn't get that. And I sort of, you know, I take up space. I attract attention. And so, you know, when I would come in, want fries with that? Like, it was like, oh, blow it out. Like, and I mean, not to say that I was treating every, you know, audition like I was on stage, you know, performing for the back row, but let's face it, Pepper, on the other hand, was a role that I was given total permission to be as big as I wanted to be. You know what I mean? Between the prosthetics that, you know, let's face it, masked all that, you know, bad theater acting, but also the character needed to be that anime, you know, what am I trying to say? Basically, you know, this very subtle television acting that's very, you know, in vogue now, and which I work at to this day, would have been completely lost on Pepper. Like I really needed to move my face to do that role. Like that was, I had a lot of stuff going on, and you know, I needed to like penetrate the makeup, and so I guess what I'm saying is that was really the perfect storm of a role, because it they needed an unknown, because I'm so sorry. I have a neighbor with a Harley. Okay, good. He's gone.
I don't hear it.
Ugh, it's nope. Like, oh, and he loves to just rev it for a while. Like, okay, we'll just pause until you're man enough to go. Okay, you don't hear it. Good, good.
No,
good.
We don't hear it on this end. Think.
It was, they needed someone who was, you know, unknown enough, because let's face it, you know, you're not going to cast Lady Gaga and then cover her face in prosthetics, like, and to the point of unrecognizability. Like, you're paying for that face. You want to see it. You know what I mean? Whereas my face, who cares? Nobody knew my face. So might as well cover it up. It's not that great a face. So I think in that regard, they needed an unknown. But also, you know, I'd like to say, think I was perfect for them too, because let's face it, they needed an improviser, because so much of that role was improvised. Like it's in the script, but so much of what I was doing was just being that character in the moment. Like it wasn't necessarily written. What I had to do wasn't necessarily written down. Like if you were to compile all my lines, I mean, you could fill it on one page probably at the end of the day, you know what I mean? Because I was giving it, you know, more.
That's so interesting. How long did it take in makeup?
The makeup was about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Wow.
And that's with two guys like splitting me down the middle. You know, and they whittled that down. Like they, you know, that was them doing that every day. They knew they could whip this out fast. That was fast.
Wow. Well, that, I mean, you were born to do this role, it seems like. I mean, it's just an iconic role. I think, you're going to go down in history as one of the top horror characters, right? I mean, it's amazing. I love the full backstory they gave in the Freak Show episode. So if anybody's listening, go to the video and we'll put a picture up. I'll have a picture up of the character, just so people can see the transformation. There's been a number of articles that have said, you know, see the beautiful woman behind this character, because the character is you. It's unrecognizable from you. It's just absolutely amazing what you did with this character. So how did you get that role? Then what led you to get that?
Yeah, I had an agent at the time who, you know, they called me with an audition, and there was nothing odd about that. Like I had auditions all the time, but you know, like I said, they were usually these kind of throwaway roles, which I was not throwing away. Like I was like acting to the back row, and that's what they didn't want. But you know, this was not that kind of role. This was, they really needed someone to, you know, go for it. And if there's anything I do, I go for it. I remember the audition itself was comprised of two parts. It was one was a an improv that they gave me a ball. They said, pretend you're four years old, like you're a small child, and you're trying to get us to play with you. So I had no idea what that was about, but you know, like I said, I'm an improviser in my core, and you know, do that. Then they had me do a monologue of Jessica Lange's from season one, which again, no idea what that was about. I'd had my dear friend who, you know, knew television well, kind of fill me in on the murder house. And so I knew that whole story, but of course that didn't really help me for Asylum, but I didn't know that. I didn't know anything. I just did the monologue. And now I know, like, obviously they weren't trying to cast Constance Langdon. Like, she'd been cast very well. But they really just wanted to see if I could act. They wanted to see that I had range, that I could go from, you know, the 4-year-old, you know, youthful Pepper to the, you know, evolved alien abducted Pepper. But they didn't let on as to, you know, what they were up to. It wasn't until we were shooting the alien abducted Pepper that I even knew that whole story.
That's amazing. You know? Wow.
Yeah. I want to say I was in those first 3 episodes, and then there I wasn't, and I didn't know what happened. I thought maybe I screwed up or something, you know. I thought, you know, and people would ask, because, you know, the general public was watching. We were only maybe 5 or so episodes ahead of the viewing public. So my friends would say, like, where's Pepper? What's going on? And I'm like, I don't know. I went pee and then I never came back. Like, I don't know. I just know I'm not allowed to cut my hair. And believe me, this haircut is really hard to rock. So
is it true that you shaved your head?
Yeah.
For the role?
Yeah, you can watch that on YouTube too.
That's amazing.
Yeah. For the season 2, they actually shaved everything but that little hair, that little piece, which was a bit compromising. I mean, they got me a nice wig and I wore that for the most part, which honestly isn't far from what I have now. Thank you, wow. COVID. Then for Freak Show, they actually shaved it all off. And wow. That was actually honestly much better because, well, I was in New Orleans in the dead of the summer. Like, you don't want to be, you don't want anything on your body you don't absolutely have to have in July in NOLA. So I was fine being just this odd bald woman. although I remember every now and then I would get recognized and people are like, oh, can I take a picture? And I was like, yes, but can you not post until like September? Because, you know, otherwise, like, what's Pepper doing hanging out in New Orleans for, you know, indefinitely, you know, and why hasn't she posted herself for several months, you know? So,
okay. So so it was filmed, that particular Freak Show was filmed in New Orleans.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. We have a lot of films filmed up here in Vancouver. Have you ever been up this way?
Oh, I've heard it's beautiful. I mean, I've been to Canada, but never Vancouver.
Oh.
I've heard. I mean, I'm told.
Yeah. Yeah, we have lots of TV shows filmed up here.
Yes, I've actually been. It was during that time when I couldn't get arrested there or cast. I was told, somebody was like, why don't you marry a Canadian? And I was like, what? So, like, and they were like, you probably could get total, you could get work up there. I'm like, oh my God, is that what it's going to take? Like, what's it going to take, Hollywood?
Yeah, right. My son is an extra in a lot of TV shows and movies. But okay, so now you're on American Horror Story. You've got your YouTube channel. And so, and then you've been on other seasons as well as other characters, right?
Right. I was, of course, the first crossover character in the series history as Pepper in both Asylum and Freak Show. And then they brought me back season 8, Apocalypse, as one of the Satanists who, you know, knocks on Michael Langdon's door. And then there's and then, of course, I came back most recently in the American Horror Stories, the spinoff series, as Rabid Ruth, the, you know, right. woman warning everyone about the movie.
Mm.
People watch that. The drive-in episode, I believe it was called.
Right. Well, they must have liked you to keep bringing you back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't cost that much. No, I mean, the show has a ginormous budget. I'm sure it's not that. But I was a pretty good return on my, you know, their investment. When I was first cast, I was a co-star. I was one up from extra. And, you know, I did get a raise and I got, you know, promoted from there to guest star. But yeah, not bad. Not bad.
That's amazing. That's so neat. Your name comes up in the credits when those seasons come on.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's amazing. Your role is just amazing. So we have a number of horror and thriller podcasters and shows in the group. And one of them asked, is horror your favorite genre now? And will you be doing any more work on American Horror Story? Any plans for future episodes?
For answer them in order. The first would be, I feel like it should be because horror has been so good to me. So I'm hardly gonna, you know, bite the hand that feeds me, but, I just love good work. You know, I would say, I have very eclectic tastes. I would say like my favorite movie is Borat. Again, as an improviser, as a comedic, like character, comedian, Sacha Baron Cohen does is just so brilliant to me. But that said, I also just love really great acting. Like I'm thinking of like, I don't know, Amadeus or Dancer in the Dark or, some of these like dramas that are just like Requiem for a Dream. Like, I don't need, what genre is that? Is that, it's sort of horror because it's horrible, but you know, it was really, you know, Ellen Burstyn character that I was just, I mean, drama. So, I just love really great acting. I'm not particularly picky about what genre it's in. I've seen some wonderful acting in horror. I've seen some horrible acting in horror. So I don't think it's, I can't say it's my favorite. At the end of the day, you know, deep in my core, I still am that little, you know, character comedian. Lily Tomlin and Tracy Ullman and Carol Burnett and Gilda Radner. I mean, these are my touchstones. So that's the trajectory I was going for. I'm going a different way, but I'm not mad at the way I'm going. So it's all good.
Your channel is brilliant. I mean, your sketch comedy you do on there, it's, if anybody's looking for entertainment, go and check it out. We'll put the link in the show notes to your YouTube channel because it is absolutely brilliant. I watched hours and hours of it.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
I was binging it because I just couldn't get enough. Just fantastic.
Honestly,
so talented.
I was so tired of fighting with cats for views. Like I was like, literally, you know, some guy says, you know, take my wife, take my house. And I was like, and he gets bazillions of views. Like I can't work like this. So, you know, every now and then, there was a point where I just kind of stopped. Cause I was like, this is crazy making. I'm literally competing against cats. But so I really appreciate you saying that.
It's really good.
I needed to hear it like 12 years ago, but I appreciate it now.
Well, I mean, that yoga sketch, that'll go down in history. I mean, that is hilarious. Everybody's got to check it out. And your one woman like shows this.
It's pretty dated though now. Like when I watch it, I'm like, this was very pre Me Too. Like, you know, I also love yoga and I do a ton of it. And so while I was at the Groundlings, it was like every week I would come with a different yoga sketch. Cause when I wasn't home writing for the Groundlings, I was in class doing yoga. And so I couldn't help but like, what would happen if this happened? You know, what How would this work? And yeah. So, I'm glad there's some documentation of that, you know, time of my life. Although, yeah, I don't think it's aged that great. Like nowadays, people really frown on, you know, teachers taking advantage of students.
Well, it's a lot of funny stuff on your channel there. And I was wondering, do you ever go to conventions as the character? Like, does AHS ever have you, you know, go to things as the character?
So, no. I mean, I do go to a lot of conventions, but not as a character. First of all, no one's paying me to shave my head, right? I'm not going to shave my head for a convention. Yeah. And that's what it would take. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are ball caps, but I did once, it was Son of Monsterpalooza, which is a Halloween convention in Pasadena, California, I remember the AHS makeup people asked me, will you come and can we demo you on a stage? And so they actually did. And that's something to YouTube. Look up, it's, I want to say PPI, Premier Products or something, PPI. And just look up Pepper PPI. Basically, this makeup company, PPI, sponsored this booth where they did me up and then they just unleashed me onto the crowd. And I'm Pepper. And the show had just barely aired. I want to say it had been out for like one episode. And so half the crowd, like the serious, you know, hardcore AHS fans, knew what that was. But the other half were like, what the hell was that? And it was hilarious. That was fun. So yes, I did that once. But you know, it takes a village. It's, first of all, I don't own the character, so I can't, you know, really do her without I definitely can't do her without the hair and makeup doing their part. But you know, she lives at the asylum. She lives at the, you know, in her sister's house. She lives in the freak show. Like she, you know, yeah. Unfortunately, no. Your question, will you be coming back? That's really not a Naomi Grossman question. That is a question for the creators, the writers of the producers of the show. So tell your listeners to get on the internet, you know, tweet the question, you know, hashtag bring Pepper back. Cause that's how these things work. I mean, truly, like we don't realize, but there's someone like employed at FX to sort of see what's popping. What do people want to see? And, you know, they'll never kill off Norman Reedus in Walking Dead. It would, like, housewives everywhere would riot. Like, they know better. You know what I mean? Like, so, like I said, people, they're aware. They know what people are saying. And, you know, people were loud enough about Pepper the first time that she came back for a second. We just need people to get loud again.
That's awesome. So no plans right now. But what else do you have going on?
Well, like I said, I just come when I'm called. Like people don't realize that. I think people have this idea that we're, you know, the actors are the top of the food chain and we're just sitting there, you know, passing on scripts on our pool, you know, poolside, you know, eating grapes, like the pool boys, you know, And really it's not like that. It's usually really for the writers and producers to decide at the end of the day. And if there's a role in it, then we come when we're called. But if there's not a role, then we got nowhere to go. So, that's why I say like, maybe I don't know. And even if I did know, I wouldn't be able to tell you because those NDAs are no joke. So.
Well, I love this artwork you have going on behind you. Is this your artwork?
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's a whole room's worth. It's like, it just never ends.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
Multi-talented.
I know. And it's really It's inspiring to me because, you know, at one time I always sort of felt like being an actor was kind of self-serving. Like I just want all eyes on me and I want the attention and I want, you know, no, like the fact that I have others, that my art inspired others' art is really a beautiful thing to me. And so this is my like little homage. I mean, I feel like, you know, Pepper bought this house, so she gets her own room, you know, but really it's almost like, you know, a trophy room. It's like when you, you know, you put your kids, you know, chicken scratch on the refrigerator. So proud, you know, like this is my kid's chicken scratch. Like my work, produce this work, and it's beautiful to me.
That's amazing. That is so amazing. So how would you see overall your YouTube channel helped you get that role and other roles that you've done?
Well, like I said, it's impossible to pinpoint like, oh, this led to that, because it just didn't work that way. But I do believe, like I said before, that it was just an accumulation. Like the YouTube channel kept me creative, kept me in the game, gave casting something to Google, you know. Had it not been for that body of work, I might have, I don't know, gone home, gotten into real estate in Denver. Like, I don't know what I would have done. Like, but, you know, that kept me busy. It kept me in the game such that I was in the right place at the right time and, you know, was able to come when they called.
That's amazing. Well, thank you from all women for being a voice, a woman's voice in this industry, and also just for lifting other women's voices through your work. So thank you so much for being here and for everything you shared and for all the creativity that you're pouring into the world. We want you to know that we appreciate you. We hear you, we see you, and we just love your work. Thank you for being here.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much for having me. Mwah. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to today's interview. You can find all the links we mentioned today in the show notes at womeninpodcasting.show. We'd love your follows, subscribes, and positive reviews. They help us to elevate women's voices everywhere. I invite you to join our community in the Women in Podcasting Facebook group and VIP club at womeninpodcasting.com.